This episode is brought to you by On Investing, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Each week, hosts Liz Ann Saunders, Schwab's chief investment strategist, and Kathy Jones, Schwab's chief fixed income strategist, bring you fresh insights on what's happening in the markets and why, and what the implications might be for your portfolio. Join Kathy and Liz Ann as they explore questions like, how do you evaluate corporate bonds that look interesting? And what sectors are on the move right now? Download the latest episode and subscribe at schwab.com/oninvesting or wherever you get your podcast.
I think we can all agree the current political moment is fraught. But how does it compare to the other fraught political moments in history?
It felt for a time in part of that decade like everything was falling apart. Young people against old people, anti-war violence, peace movement.
I'm former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, and this week, presidential historian Doris Kearns Goodwin joins me on my podcast, Stay Tuned with Preet. We talk about difficult times in America's history and how its people overcame them. The episode is out now. Search and follow Stay Tuned with Preet wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And I'm Scott Galloway.
Hello, Scott. I'm in San Francisco and you're in New York. They have a big giant, I'm going to put this on the internet's picture of you above my head. It's like a giant head, like the Apple commercial.
Yeah. Well, remember, I'm a Mac, you're a PC, that whole thing.
What are you? Are you a Mac or a PC?
Oh, no. I'm the Palm Pilot that never got launched. What am I?
They showed that off at Code, our version of Code, many years ago.
We
all knew it was a dud right from the start.
Yeah.
Like, immediately.
I'm the foldable phone. Shit, I don't know. What tech would you be? If you were tech, what would you be?
What would I be if I were tech? I'm AirPods.
AirPods, nice. Your pods.
Yeah, that's nice. Everybody likes them. It makes people look bad, but they still like them. They don't know why they like them, but they put them in their ears. You see what I'm saying?
Except for the ear part. Yeah. Anyways, anywho. So, look, you've had a big week.
I did.
Interviews with presidential candidates Yang, Bennett, and Buttigieg.
Yes.
So I would like you to kind of summarize your general impression of the three of them or compare and contrast them. What's your take on them? Headline news on each of them.
All right. Here's the deal. So first I interviewed Michael Bennett, which is someone who you're a big fan of and spent time with. Super brainy. And you can hear it. He's super brainy. In any other world, he would be the leading presidential candidate, any other era, but not this era because things have changed so drastically. He's very smart. He has lots of great ideas about, I don't want to say the word real Americans, but he thinks about other things besides the ongoing fracas in Washington, D.C. and between Trump and the world, essentially. And so although he does participate in it, he's really just has lots of great ideas. He was an education director, ran their education in Colorado. He's got, he's great. He's really great. I thought that was really good. I think he's never going to be president.
Yeah.
I feel like he's secretary of blank.
Right. What about if Kamala is the nominee? Could he be a veep?
Yeah, he could be. He certainly could be. I think that you would see her picking someone maybe like Mayor Pete, who I asked him directly if he was running for vice president. You know what I mean? That's what it felt like to me. It was a question that just it didn't pop out of my head, but I think about that a lot with him. He was great. He's, as advertised, he's super smart. He's adorable. He has paragraph answers for everything. He thinks
this
very
is Mayor
fast
Pete,
on his
right?
feet. Yeah, Mayor Pete.
Yeah, yeah.
Michael Bennett seems like a kind of a cool, real dude that you would know, like your dad or your uncle, a really good uncle kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete Buttigieg feels a little bit more sort of baked. And I used a quote that was used about him, that idea that, if you had to build a candidate, an anti-Trump candidate, this is what you'd build, essentially. And I could see that. He pushed back on that concept. He's got the military. He's got gay, but not too gay. And that was, of course, a controversy on the internet this week, too. He's just
someone called him a very calm character. Someone referred to him as a non-carbonated gay. And then there was that awful article in, what was it, the New Republic?
New Republic
Mary
by
Pete?
Dale Peck. Yeah, that was terrible.
That was really rough. I read
buried
that.
In that terrible article, there were some really good points, about how it feels like a cooked candidate.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was interesting. I really enjoyed talking to him. And he certainly... He had just done the Douglas Plan, which was dealing with issues around African Americans in this country. And then he talked a little bit about tech. I got the sense that he didn't quite – he's got some smart ideas on it, but he's sort of very middle of the road on the tech stuff. And then he sort of popped up with this idea that he liked Right to be Forgotten, which I found
And you pushed back
fascinating.
On that.
Yeah, because I don't think he knew what he was – I think he was referring to data ownership.
Mm-hmm.
But he was using the right to be forgotten, which, of course, would be impossible to implement in this country because of the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think he's very quick study, and I think he understands the issues. I don't think tech is one of his biggest issues. Again, middle of the road with breaking them up, middle of the road with – you know, he's a centrist candidate, it seems like. And I enjoyed the interview, and he certainly has enormous amounts of fans. And we went back and forth. I think I pushed him more than most people do.
Andrew Yang. Know, just like, what about Yang?
Sorry?
Tyless Andrew Yang.
Yang Gang. Hashtag Yang Gang. I really enjoyed this interview. I thought he was, you know, I know there's issues around Venture for America and whether it was successful or not. And he's got a lot of, like, really crazy right-wing fans who he decries, by the way, who really like his idea around universal basic income. And we talked a lot about that. I think it's called the Freedom Dividend.
Right.
And very interesting, a smart guy who really does a good job in a more substantive discussion. I can't imagine, you know, he even talked about being on the stage, how it's impossible to get his ideas out because they're so complicated and substantive. They're not complex. You could understand them, but anyway.
I mean, we'll see. I don't think Andrew has much of a chance of making it. But here's the thing. He's injected into the public debate this notion of universal guaranteed income. I don't like it, but it's an important issue because this notion of trying to figure out an expeditious way to kind of level up Americans who are struggling. And that's how I think of universal guaranteed income, although I don't like the idea of any way discouraging work, if you will. But he's injected it into the bloodstream.
Discourage work. I think you should listen to this podcast because I think he has a concept around it that is, you know, it frees people to try to become entrepreneurial by taking burdens off of them. But, you know.
Because they have enough to pay basic rent, they can take more risks.
Yeah. 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 It's an interesting – you should listen to the podcast because he really does. I'm not – like you, I'm a little bit dubious about it. But he was making some very good arguments about who removes people from welfare. It takes away other costs if people can create jobs. One of his best examples, I think, is he reminded me of you in a lot of ways. Oddly enough, Andrew.
Really? Go on.
You. Yes.
Go
yes,
on.
Yes. Yes. He pushed back on me a lot. I was like, listen, dude, you're supposed to be subservient to my needs here in this interview.
Now you're talking my language. Now you're talking my language.
When I was pushing back on universal basic income, he said, you know, when companies give out dividends to people, stop touching. Scott is in our podcast booth and he's touching the sides of the.
Oh, my God. You can see
that's
me?
That's noise canceling.
What is this, a Facebook pivot camera? What else have you seen? Oh, my God. That is so scary that you can see me right now. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah. All right. So he was saying, like, when companies give shareholders money back as dividends, nobody asks how they're going to spend it.
Right.
And he feels like it'll put money all over the country that can be spent anyway. And we shouldn't question how it's spent. We should just say it's being spent.
Yeah.
And so it creates an economic boom in places that don't have money and stuff. Anyway, he's an interesting guy.
Well, he's captured the imagination of a lot of your cohorts out there in Silicon Valley. He's raised a ton of money.
Yeah, he has. The only thing I said is I'm a Silicon Valley reporter for many, many years. I've never met you, so I don't know how you're the Silicon Valley candidate.
Oh, because he has not kissed the ring, i.e. the ass of Kara Swisher?
I mean, is that what you're saying? He's around here. Like, he's not an entrepreneur.
Oh, my gosh.
He is an entrepreneur. But anyway, he was great. I was really impressed. We ended up having some dinner afterwards, and I really – he's got a lot of super fans, too, which I think is interesting.
So when does the little dog get to go to the big dog park? When do I get to interview one of these candidates? When do you invite me?
What do you want to do? You name. Do you want to do Elizabeth Warren with me? Come on.
Oh, she's so smart. I'm scared of her. No, I think I want to do.
You're scared of her. She's tall. I
think Biden.
She could kick the shit.
I think I'd like to do Biden.
Obviously.
I'd feel more comfortable with an old white guy.
Okay. All right. If I get Biden, you're coming. How about that?
I'm in. I'm in with Joe.
All right, but what
I miss the good
person
ones.
You'd like to interview?
I think
you
all
you sit
fantastic.
Here and complain, and then you don't have any options.
I think they're all pretty good. Bernie would be really interesting.
Oh,
I like
Bernie
all of them.
Bernie and you and me, that would be good.
Right? The burn?
Kara.
Let's fill the burn.
Okay. We'll
all
try
right.
to get
Anyways,
burn for you,
in.
Okay? But
we're
you're
in.
Scared of Elizabeth Warren. Noted. Noted. Anyways, they're all really good, and the bar is so low. And speaking of bar being low, Trump this week, the tweet, as I predicted in the New York Times, that he would be using Twitter to do things like this, and then he turned around and made me look like a genius here. So what do you think of this tweet?
Yeah,
you know
just,
what he said.
Look,
go back to your own country, whatever.
I'm just shocked that we're shocked that we find out the president is a racist, and also I think more disappointing. So Michelle Wolf, the comedian who's kind of my favorite kind of comedian in the world right now, had this really interesting analogy, and that is that you thought – you heard mom was an alcoholic back in the 60s, and then you're at spring recital, and her purse accidentally slips open, and out bursts 40 mini bottles of Jack Daniels, and you're like, oh, shit, mom's still an alcoholic. I feel as if we're all coming to grips with the fact that the United States is still pretty racist. Mm-hmm. And we keep waiting for his supporters and a bunch of his constituents to come out and be outraged. And so we pass these dumb resolutions censoring him or trying to shame him. And what do you know? It's along party lines. And the reality, so early 40s, when your and my parents were alive, we had government officials show up to a dentist's office in Los Angeles and say, hey, we need you to sell your practice for 10 cents on the dollar and then show up to this camp with your family behind mm-hmm. barbed wire. And right. and their crime for that was they were Japanese. And that wasn't that long ago. You know, we've institutionalized racism with our economic policies, with our three strikes you're out from candidates who were supposedly liberal, Clinton. So the notion that we're shocked that somehow a president who's overtly racist as opposed to kind of quietly racist is in the White House, I'm just shocked we're so shocked. And this resolution condemning him that goes along party lines does absolutely nothing but distract us from the real issues we need to be discussing. So yes, he's a racist. Get over it. Now get on to telling people of color and everyone else how we're going to economically empower them, which is the key to getting rid of this racist bullshit, because we're a tribal species and people always find reasons to hate each other. What you got to do is economically empower people. Anyway.
You're right. It's overt. Everything he does is overt. I mean, of course, Eric Trump, the village idiot today, was like 95% of people agree with him. I don't think that is the case in any way. I do think there's a deep vein of racism that has never left.
But put a percentage on it. I have a percentage. What do you think it is? What do you think? What percentage of people do you think are likely exhibit when their actions and their behaviors are somewhat fundamentally racist? What percentage do you think it is? Not 95% in the U.S. What
no.
would you say it is?
I think it's like 20, and then there's another 30 that are like, oh, he has a point. You know, quietly, oh, he has a point kind of thing, or maybe 30. My mother loves Fox, and so I didn't talk to her for days because I didn't want to hear her insult the squad and stuff. I just didn't want to listen to her. And when I got her on the phone and she goes, I'm so sick of this. I'm like, oh, here it comes. And she goes, Trump and his cronies are just the worst. And she never does that. Like, she's like, I'm so sick of this. Like, it was really interesting. So I do think most people don't like get out of this country. I don't think anybody likes that anymore. I think most people are like, what? Like, everybody's from somewhere else. So there's certain parts of it, I think, that do appeal to people. And then there's others that are like, that's just crazy. What I think of this whole thing is, as I think I tweeted this, he was accused of rape. He lost the census citizen question, and he apparently hard parties with a pedophile, and he needed something. It's like, what can I do to get the focus off this? What is the craziest thing?
Right.
So I think
here.
He's message testing 2020. I think that's well clear. And so he did this, and that's what we're talking about. And there, here we are.
What about Peter Thiel going after Google?
All right, we'll move on to Peter Thiel from Peter Thiel's situation. Honestly, this guy, he suddenly crawls out of his troll hole, by the way. Yeah. He's been quiet for a while. If you've noticed, he's been super quiet. And, you know, here he is, board member of Facebook, someone involved with Palantir and all kinds of things that have been problematic, going after Google's way. It's the only way I look at it is that Palantir wants government contracts that they're competing with Google on, and he wants to FUD up the situation. That's the only thing I can say. And, of course, he goes to his friend Tucker Carlson, who would just eat it up with a spoon. That's how I look at it.
Yeah. Peter Thiel saying that he's worried about Google being co-opted by the Chinese and that this is near treasonous. A board member of Facebook saying that is literally similar to Jeffrey Epstein saying he's disturbed by the documentary on Michael Jackson. It's just, okay, boss.
That's exactly
you're just not really in a position of moral authority to be criticizing other big tech. It's just incredible that I would imagine the other Facebook board members are giving him the same advice that Albert Brooks gave William Hurt in Broadcast News when he said, what do you do when your reality exceeds your wildest imagination? And Albert Brooks says, keep it to yourself.
Right.
This guy should
keep
those thoughts
to himself.
They
won't do anything because they didn't do anything during the Gawker thing. I forget, it was Cheryl or Mark on stage asking about when Peter went after Gawker secretly. And I had the problem with he's a board member of a company that's trying really hard to help publishers or say they are, and then there's board members secretly suing one out of business. And they're like, well, Peter does what he wants. It's nothing to do with Facebook. That's usually their position on Peter Thiel, it seems like. He can do what he wants separately. It's nothing separate with Peter Thiel.
Yeah, he's a unique individual. It's very hard to put your finger on him. I loved his book, Zero to One. But he's an odd duck. There's just no getting around it. I don't see how that calculus pays off for Facebook or
Of was what agenda is going on. Which of the many agendas of Peter Thiel was happening here? There's so many to choose from, and they're all nefarious in some fashion. And I was like, which one? Why now? Why does he suddenly get loud when he was quiet before? What's his move? And he's so smart. Talk about a chess player. I don't even think I can figure out what his grand move is. And I think, you know, you'll see more of him as the election goes forward. But it's interesting that he just pops up. I was like, whoa, hi, you again. It. Like, you know, they're making It 2, another version of It. That's what I feel like the clown is.
It's the guy with the hockey mask and the chainsaw. Wait, we weren't expecting you back.
There you are.
And then the last thing, did you see the testimony? Is his name David Marcus, the guy who's head of Libra or Calibra?
Yes, David, he's a lovely guy.
Oh, you like him? He's nice?
He's a nice guy, yes.
Yeah, but he claims that his argument has gone to this nationalist argument that, well, if we don't do it, a foreign company is going to do this. It's like, well, yeah, from what I understand, there's other American companies. I mean, J.P. Morgan or Amazon could do this. And it's
this
so funny.
This is Libra. He's running Facebook's Libra.
Yeah, he's running Libra. By the way, for all of you, supposedly a lot of people in Silicon Valley listen to our podcast. Mm-hmm. If you're working for Libra, you are literally heading to work this morning to waste your life.
Yeah.
It's as if, like, the only thing I could think of to better waste your efforts and finite time on this planet is to transfer into the Pivot camera division. There is absolutely no way any government is going to allow Facebook, who brought the weaponization of our elections and teen depression, control of our economy. It's incredibly impressive that they would delude themselves into thinking this thing's going to go anywhere. So high Facebook execs heading up whatever it is, that horrible highway with no cell phone coverage, today just doesn't count for you.
280.
Yeah. To nowhere.
That's the highway.
To nowhere.
All right. But speaking of Facebook, the fine that came, you know, I was at the FTC last week, but I figured this was coming down. The fine that we got was exactly the slap on the wrist. And it looks like they didn't even have to do much for it. So thoughts, Scott Gallery? I'd like to hear a rant because you did that at this book party. You did a nice rant and scared it. By the way, I've gotten more reports that you terrified all the Washington people and thrilled them at the same time.
I like it. So look, this seriously was almost perfect. And all we were missing from this being restoring faith in our government from the public, creating a series of incentives and disincentives around the algebra of deterrence to create better behavior. The only thing that was missing here was simple. What was missing was nothing. Specifically, what was missing, Kara, was a zero. And that is if the fine had been $50 billion versus $5 billion. Facebook has $40 billion in cash. They would have been able to pay it, but they would have had to issue debt. The stock would have gone from 205 to 80. Mark Zuckerberg's wealth would have been cut from $60 billion to $25 billion, and trust me on this, within 90 days, they would have figured out 80% of these problems. Because it's one thing for them to be shamed. They don't give a shit. It's one thing for them to be called in front of Congress. They send their high-priced lawyers. It's another thing for their wealth to be cut by two-thirds. They would have figured this shit out. So this was almost perfect, minus a zero. The $50 billion fine could have happened. Well, you know what? The world is what we make of it. These fines used to be tens or hundreds of millions. Now they're in the billions. And one of our predictions was that you're going to see a $10 billion plus fine out of the EU, which seemed crazy 2 years ago. And it's about to happen. And who is it going to happen against? It's going to happen against Amazon. We're going to see our first $10 billion plus fine Q4 or Q1 of next year from our ultimate gangster.
Well, let's get to that in predictions next when we come back. I agree with you, Scott. I was like, oh, of course, this is what they got. And it actually tells them to break the law again. Like,
exactly.
It doesn't. That's the price of it. And that's going to be a problem because they should be
brought to bear. Stock was up the day it was announced.
All right. We'll do wins and fails and predictions right after the break.
This episode is brought to you by On Investing, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Each week, hosts Liz Ann Saunders, Schwab's chief investment strategist, and Kathy Jones, Schwab's chief fixed income strategist, analyze economic developments and bring context to conversations around equities, fixed income, the economy, and more. Join Kathy, Liz Ann, and their guests as they share insights on what might be moving the markets and why, as well as what indicators they are watching for signs of change. They'll also answer investor questions on everything from how sectors are evolving to what the bond markets are telling us, to where to look for opportunities and considerations for your portfolio. You can download the latest episode of On Investing and subscribe so you never miss an episode at schwab.com/oninvesting or wherever you get your podcasts.
In a lot of ways, the leader of Canada is not like the leader of the United States. Justin is 52, Joe is 81, but the two do share some struggles. Trudeau's been in office for a while, he's being challenged by a conservative populist, and he's struggling in the polls, especially with young people. But now, he's got a plan to fix it, all of it.
Among the $52.9 billion in new spending,
he's proposing a $23 billion program to get nearly 4 million homes built between now and 2031.
He's got a budget that speaks directly to millennials and Gen Z, or Gen Z as he calls them, and he's hoping it'll keep populism at bay in Canada too. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is going to join us on Today Explained to tell us all about it. Today Explained, Vox's daily news podcast, Monday through Friday, in your feeds.
We're back, and I'm here with Scott Galloway. All right, we're going to do wins and fails now. Scott, what is your win this week?
So my win is Rep. Ayanna Pressley and her tweet responding to the president's comments, attacking her and other congresswomen of color. She said, and I quote, "I encourage the American people and all of us not to take the bait. This is a disruptive distraction from the issues of care, concern, and consequence." And I think she's exactly right. I think that the Democrats, if they're going to take back the White House, the outrage and the indignance at the president isn't going to get them the White House. It's going to be, all right, what do we do to solve some of the problems of our own making, of his making? But all right, enough already. Yeah, fine. Clap back. When you say, tell me to go home, that means I go home to Michigan or wherever. Show how stupid it is. And then move on and start focusing. Start playing offense as opposed to defense. And I think she gets it. So my win is Representative Pressley. Who's your win?
My win, I got to say, this week, one thing, this was such a bad week of Twitter and news and everything else. It was just the worst. And then Monica Lewinsky did a tweet that made me so happy. I couldn't stand it. Someone, I think it was
Monica?
Adam Grant, you know, the handsome Adam Grant.
Yeah, the better version of me.
Best in you in so many ways. Yeah. He said, what career advice did someone give you that was a mistake? And Monica Lewinsky replied that working at the White House would look good on my resume. Working as a summer intern at the White House, look at my resume. And she just left and she just dropped it like that and moved along. And I thought, I really love Monica Lewinsky. I think she's handled herself probably the
Smart,
most classy woman in America, given all the shit that's been rained down on her. And I just thought
agreed.
That was just fantastic. Made
no,
me
that's
laugh.
Good
it
stuff.
Still does today.
That's good stuff. That's a nice win. And your fail?
My fail? Oh, God, so many fails.
So many?
You know, again, Twitter. The Twitter and letting this happen go on and on. But probably, you know, how little we've heard from the tech companies with this ongoing weaponization of these platforms. You know, they seem to have been trying to stay out of the way. And I want them to step up more. They're not going to. And I sit there and wait for them to do so, you know, in that regard. And then on a minor fail, that New Republic piece about Pete Buttigieg, I do see – I think the failure wasn't so much the writer, because he is what he is. His book was called Hatchet Job, so you know what you're going to get from him. But it was a failure on the editors of the New Republic to put it up and then take it down. Like, why did they put it up? Why didn't they edit it? There's all kinds of things going on. So I thought that was the fail for me this week, to watch that. And in this day and age, when so many things are so twitchy and quick, not to understand how that would be done, was I just don't even understand where that editing failure happened.
I like it. Okay, so my fail starts with a question, Kara. I'm an investor in several private companies, and let's say one of them just went crazy and was Google, and overnight I was a billionaire. So as a 54-year-old white heterosexual billionaire, does that mean I'm obligated to run for president or qualified, in your view?
No, Tom Steyer, you're not.
There you go. So my loss this week is Tom Steyer, who's running for president for no other fucking reason than he's in his 50s, white, and a billionaire. His entire rap is reheated Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, where he blames corporations for co-opting the government. No, boss, corporations are inanimate legal entities. It's rich people as yourself that have probably co-opted Washington. Literally, absolutely nothing to add to the debate. But you know what? These guys, if their Commonwealth, if their interest in the Commonwealth, this is literally the Full Employment Act for local TV stations and political consultants. He says he's going to spend $100 million taking oxygen away from other people who actually know how to govern. He and Howard Schultz should get in a room and say, okay, tell you what, you're white. You're a billionaire. I know you should run for president. No, you should run for president. No, you should run for president. And then they should blow each other and go home. And they should take that $250 million that they're going to spend on media, and they should do something that actually helps the world. They should spend it on voter registration. They should take $250 million and give it to Planned Parenthood if they're really interested in the advancement of women and people of color. But the notion that literally, like, well, I'm white and I'm a billionaire, so that's my calling to be president.
All right.
It just seems ridiculous. It's like, where, who told them this? That's my fails Tom Steyer.
I feel that's a good one. And it really, I think he should take the money and do something else with it. I agree with you. And he can do whatever he wants with his money, but you're right. It's just sort of like, why now? I think they feel that maybe there's a point to get in here. Like, this is the point to get in. You know, if
they have something different
to
say.
So much better, right? Bloomberg you did know, it, you'd be happy.
Howard Schultz, my sense is he's a great guy. What is different about what he said? What is different? If they had a message, fine. What is different about their message that's not already being said by people who have governed?
All right, but I'm just going to contrast. If Bloomberg said he was jumping in, how would you feel?
He spent 12 years running the 11th largest nation in the world with huge success. Right. He's qualified.
Yeah.
Yep. He's qualified.
Okay. All right. All right. I agree with you. I'm with you on this one. All right. Predictions. So you made a little one before. You made a tiny little prediction before. But let me ask you one. One of the things is a Lion King from Disney. You love yourself some Bob Iger, as you discussed last week or the week before. Pre-release reviews are bad. It looks kind of creepy. It definitely does. But Aladdin live action made $332 million domestically so far, and it had mixed reviews too. What is your prediction, Mr. Media?
Doesn't matter. Everyone's going to see it. Anyone with kids is going to go see anything that says Disney on it. And if you don't see it in the theaters, you're going to see it at home. And your kids immediately, just look at the way your kids respond to the graphics and the coloring and the visual identity that connotes Disney or Pixar. It means that you watch it. It could get 0 stars or 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. And at some point, they're going to monetize it because their brand is so consistently stands for outstanding quality, you know, a real genuine concern about the well-being of children in terms of not weaponizing their platform. Have you ever been to Disneyland?
Yes, I was forced there by Bob Iger. He made me go. He wouldn't come to code until I went. And then they filmed me there. It's as a hostage video, I feel like that was what. He literally had a film crew of me getting on all the rides. And every time I turned around, there was a film crew there writing, and I said, like, help, help me, let me out. I was doing it with my eyes and stuff like that. And then I called it the unhappiest place on earth to him. We go back and forth. I went on a Disney cruise, too. He forced me on one of those, too.
What did you think of the Disney cruise?
Great. That was great. There was constant soft serve ice cream. I don't know what else to say. It was perfect. It was so clean and so well done. One of that weird island they made is a little creepy. But otherwise, it was a flawless experience with children, I must say.
That's one of the many ways I can tell I'm getting older. The idea of a cruise doesn't sound horrific to me anymore.
I hate cruises.
Wake up in a different city. Yeah. So, I don't think it matters back to Disney. They get so many do-overs or foul balls because they're just so outstanding. And kids, you know, we all go see almost everything. So anything from a credible organization like Disney and kids is going to – they're going to monetize the heck out of it.
Yeah,
so
you like the Disney. You live down near the Disney, right? You're kind of near.
Yeah, I live near Disney, but my favorite is next to Disney. It's Harry Potter World. That's incredible.
Yes.
That's the best of its kind. It's incredible.
That
and I don't even like the genre.
Weird. I'm sorry. I was forced to do that too. Anyway, any other predictions?
Well, revisiting a prediction, I don't know if it was 6 or 9 months ago, but we said when Facebook was at $150 that despite all the controversy, the stock was going to be at $250. And the moment I said that, it dove to $130. Mm-hmm. And now it's back at 205, and I'm doubling down. I think this stock is up another 20% by the end of the year. Because if you look at the business, and occasionally I check in and I try and use their tools from the lens of an advertiser, and it's just staggering how incredibly strong it is. And if you've seen another prediction revisiting, we said that the day that all the big tech stocks declined and lost the value of Airbus, that they were going to gain back the value of Boeing. And I don't know if you've noticed, but in the last 2.5 weeks, they've more than gained back the value of Boeing. Their stocks have ripped up to near highs again.
All of them.
Amazon's above $1 trillion. So I'm just doubling back down on that prediction that Facebook's going to touch 250.
What about Google?
I don't know about Google. Relative to the others, Google actually probably looks the cheapest because it hasn't had the run-up of the others. But I don't feel as if I understand the business well enough to make a prediction.
Any others? Breakout? Uber? Any of the others you think you're going to break out? You can include.
Well, no, you know my view on Uber and Lyft. But no, I think the stock that is going to continue to rise is Zoom. I think Zoom has got all the network effects, the explosive growth, and the recurring revenue that's required to become kind of a $200-300 billion company. So Zoom is my kind of gangster.
So the camera company, not an issue for you?
Oh, no. Speed bump. Media focused on it. Nobody's deinstalling. I mean, they can't do that. They can't do that a bunch of times. But yeah, once they get a do-over, 100%.
All right, Scott. So I'm going to call it, since you're now going to interview a presidential candidate with me, which should be comical in every aspect, and you have to, like, ask good questions, et cetera. You have to prepare for it. I'm going to call out all the major presidential candidates. We are talking to a lot of them, but come on Recode Decode. Yeah. You'll get Scott as a bonus. You guys can request him if you'd like.
Bonus. Oh, my God. That was generous. A bonus. You sure I'm not a punishment? I like that.
I don't know.
Wait, who said he was going to be here? Who said he was going to be here?
Right. Oh, should we do Beto? Why don't you just do Beto by yourself? Why don't you
I just don't think I could handle it. I just don't think I could handle it, Kara. I think I'd faint. I think I'd be like one of those Beatles fans, those girls in the 60s that just pass out and they're trying to revive them.
I'm not going
to. Beto. I'll do Beto. Yeah, I can
all
do
right.
Beto.
Okay. All right. We're Beto. Is it Beto or Beto?
I think it's Beto.
Whatever. It's Man Boy. Okay. Man Boy and you and me. It'll be great. And then I will keep saying Man Boy to both of you until you give, essentially.
Wait. So just some quick questions on the three candidates.
Right.
We're in the Situation Room and someone's launched a nuclear projectile. Which of those three people you interviewed, Yang, Bennett, or Buttigieg, would you want in that room making the decisions on how to respond to a nuclear projectile being launched?
Michael Bennett.
Who do you think has the most empathy for Americans? And I think empathy is key. I think that was President Clinton's core competence. I think at the end of the day, he really did want to help people. Who do you think has the most empathy for middle-class Americans?
Michael Bennett.
I'm going to stop asking you questions.
Keep asking another one. See if I can name another one. Who's the most best ideas?
Who would you want to date? Who would you want to take to a wedding and make out with after you get drunk?
Zero. Zero to zero. Zero.
You said to keep going. You said to keep going. You got to pick
that
one.
Question. It's not a make out.
You got to pick
presidential
one.
Presidential candidates. What the heck?
No. Jeez. They're just men.
All right. Keep moving along. They give me one more good question. I can answer someone else. Best ideas, Andrew Yang. I like his innovative mind. I think he's
interesting. Who do you think is most likely to not only have great ideas, but be effective? And that is, there's a big difference between being right and being effective in Washington. Who would be most effective in getting legislation passed?
Kamala Harris.
There you go.
There's
your gal.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. We're going to get them all on, and I'm so excited you're going to do it with me, Scott. It's going to be so much fun. Anyway, we will be back next week. Again, I'll be here in San Francisco. You're going to be in New York?
Yes, I'm going to be in New York.
Cool. But I'll be in New York soon, and I will see you then. And I'm going
to
go out finally, I think, probably. Probably not.
Yeah, maybe. Probably not.
Well, we have a live pivot. We have a live pivot, which is sold out.
Sold out.
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
Scott is upset.
Oh, my gosh.
Sold
out. Did you know something? There's actually, you can get a ticket on StubHub, and someone's trying to mark them up.
Really?
That's right. They're coming to see the big dog play with his ball at the park.
Anyway, it's going to be a great show. We do a great job at live events. We did a great one at Code.
They're
we did
fun.
A great one at South by Southwest. And,
yeah, they're fun.
And this one's going to be a lively evening with the two of us, correct?
Yeah, it's going to be great. Who would have thought these things are fun? This will be our third.
They're really fun. We're going to do a ton more all around the country, and we'll coordinate our outfits later. All right. Camila Salazar produced our show today. Nishat Kirwa is Pivot's executive producer. Thanks also to Eric Johnson and Eric Anderson. Make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcast. If you like this week's episode, leave us a review. You can also email us if you have any thoughts on the show or suggestions of topics you'd like us to hear us discuss. Pivot@voxmedia.com. Thanks for listening to Pivot from Vox Media. We'll be back next week for another breakdown of all things tech and business.
This episode is brought to you by On Investing, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Each week, hosts Liz Ann Saunders, Schwab's chief investment strategist, and Kathy Jones, Schwab's chief fixed income strategist, bring you fresh insights on what's happening in the markets and why, and what the implications might be for your portfolio. Join Kathy and Lizanne as they explore questions like, how do you evaluate corporate bonds that look interesting? And what sectors are on the move right now? Download the latest episode and subscribe at schwab.com/oninvesting or wherever you get your podcasts.